Welcome to a new episode of our S4N Changemakers podcast. Today, we are joined by someone who has not only witnessed, but actively shaped the energy transition in Europe, Dr. Dirk Paskert. Hello, Dirk. It is a pleasure to have you as our guest.
Hello, Thea, and thanks for having me, and happy to share with you my experience in driving the energy transition, and not only you, but also it's for your audience.
With over two decades of leadership in the energy sector, Dirk Paskert has helped shape the energy transition. He launched E.ON's first renewable energy strategy in the early 2000s, later served on the executive board of E.ON Energie and led Encavis AG as CEO, transforming it into a leading green power supplier. Today, he brings his strategic insight as an investor and manager to the boards of several major energy companies, including Total Energies, Intellion, and S4N. Dirk, you've had a remarkable journey through the energy sector so far. What were specific milestones that especially shaped your journey?
Actually, there are several milestones, each part of it was fascinating, being it with big conglomerates or with just with agile startups. At E.ON, it was innovation in times of prosperity in an established market, fully integrated with significant market share, so not an easy one to really make change happen. At the Mobility House, my own investment since 2011, it was pure startup culture with a belief that at some time, stationary or mobile batteries on the street can help stabilizing the grid. At Encavis, it was something else. Again, it was about turning a very profitable financial business model from feed-in tariffs into power purchase agreements, so into the merchant market. And nowadays at Total Energies, it's a transformation of an oil and gas major into a multi-energy company with net zero emissions. So all of them very, very different, but of always wonderful experience.
You've seen lots of sides of the energy transition. And if you look back, you obviously witnessed a significant transformation of the energy transition. But what were decisive or strategic turning points, not for the companies, but for the overall energy transition?
Yeah, these so-called tipping points in a transformation are always very hard to see in forefront. So if you would have asked me, when will electrification of mobility pick up, I would have said probably in the first half of the second decade of this millennium or century. But we all know it came much later. In the renewables world, I would say latest with more than 50% of energy production overall from renewables, this certainly marks a decisive point in respective markets. So it's not all over Europe. We know it's market by market, but achieving these marks, I think, that certainly is a tipping point. And I would say a tipping point is always a point of no return, where you can't go back into the old world. And I think that is what we realize today.
Yeah, this reminds me of something you said to me earlier when we talked in preparation of the podcast, that the energy transition has to be has something that must remain dynamic and has to continuously reinvent itself. So although there we cannot look back, we have to continuously reinvent the progress. What does that mean in practical terms and for especially for energy companies and policymakers?
Yeah, energy transition, as you rightly said, means a long-term journey over decades. Probably something many politicians at least have forgotten. So they always think about the next 5 years, 4 or 5 years. But the energy transition is a marathon over decades. And you are never there. You never reach your final goal. It is an ongoing innovation and really the agility of companies to innovate themselves. That is unfortunately something where politicians and politics is lagging behind most, one has to say. The regulatory framework has to embrace and boost innovation. Sorry to say, but this is, if I look back over the last 20 years, this is hard to see. And that is where energy transition is also suffering in Europe.
When you fled Gencarvus through a transformation, there, I think that's a great example of how to reinvent continuously the energy transition from a pure investor to a green power provider. What triggered that shift and what can others learn from it?
Yeah, at Gencarvus, I think we were certainly among the first in Europe to shift to PPAs and open ourselves to merchant markets. We could have gone on with our existing feed-in tariffs for quite some time. The company wouldn't have suffered immediately. But it was clear to me and my team that there is limited upside in staying longer term in the feed-in tariffs. So thus, we decided to be first movers. And also to embrace the challenges of a open market. And I think we did right because we learned a lot during that first phase. And we were still able really to pick the good deals in the market in early days. So therefore, no regret.
Perfect. PPA is a great buzzword besides other business models and technology within the energy transition. What would you say is currently overhyped, or are there others that are more underestimated, such as PPAs, or if you think of AI, artificial intelligence, or batteries? What is your expert view on those technologies? Which one would you say are currently overhyped and which ones are currently underestimated?
First of all, we have to distinguish between business models and technologies. So technology, there's again and again, there is a hype on certain technologies one day, and the other day, the market lets them fall. So there is also no answer in the energy transition to what is the right technology. We need many technologies and many solutions to facilitate the energy transition. There is not the one technology which makes it or takes it all. If you look, for instance, at hydrogen, that is a very good example for a star and a fallen angel at the same time. So within 2 years, it was hyped. And nowadays, hydrogen is looked at from a more negative perspective. I don't share that because I think we need hydrogen, but only for certain market applications, not for the entire market. That is also true for many other technologies, be it batteries, be it all kinds of renewable production. We need all of them, but they have to find their places. And at the end of the day, it's cost, which cost of production, which are decisive. And then you apply on that basis of a sound cost basis, you apply business models. And then that is where, for instance, PPAs play an important role, because they give you then the ability to plan, have a long-term plan for producer as well as customers because they bound two parties together for a longer time and give this financial stability to apply that technology in the market. So therefore, the answer is we need a lot of technologies and we need some flexible business models in order to apply them.
Mm-hmm. And when you think of business models or technologies such as hydrogen PPAs and so on, what is your take on the plans of, for example, that we want or need to build more gas-powered conventional power plants in Germany? Is that something that's also overhyped?
No, definitely not, because that plays now again into this long-term journey. We need secure energy production. And we all know that the wind doesn't blow all the day or day and night, and for sure the sun doesn't shine by night. So therefore, renewables, even if you have a lot of batteries, before you get to a stage where renewables can fix it all, it will take a long, long time. And I would make a question mark behind whether from an economic point of view for the entire society, it is at all, a reasonable goal to go to a 100% renewable world. Probably 60, 70, 80% will make the bill, and the rest you produce from other sources. And their gas-fired power plants can play a vital role in a different way than in the years before. I mean, in former times, a CCGT would run at 4,000 or more hours a year, so at least half the year or even a little bit more. Probably the new investments in gas-fired are only at 1,000 or 2,000 hours, so complete different economic perspective on that technology. The question marks of what to do with CO2 emissions, I think there are solutions. You can use carbon capture and other technologies, yeah, in order to make that happen. But I'm rather a supporter of this kind of different technologies would really make us to come to net zero in the future, rather than just focusing on 100% renewables. And therefore, long answer to your short question, I think we need gas-fired power plants, but definitely we have to take care about the carbon.
Interesting. And when you take a look from Germany to Europe, you already implied what your views on that, but how would you assess the current state of the European energy markets in general in regards to supply security, price stability, or even investor confidence?
Yeah, it's a widespread landscape in Europe, because energy transition, market by market, country by country, comes at a different pace. Definitely in Germany, we are probably most advanced, but also with a lot of problems in terms of security of supplies. And I mean, you always have this triangle: security of supply, the environmental aspect, as well as price stability. And at the end of the day, politicians have to fulfill all three goals. It doesn't help you if you are a superstar on one and you are lagging behind on the others. So therefore, you have to always, your energy policy has to embrace all three goals at the same time. And there we see different approaches in Europe, with discussions also in the societies, which are completely different. If you, for instance, just look at France and Germany with the use of nuclear power, it's a complete different spectrum in two neighboring countries. So therefore, I think that countries will find their individual way to come to net zero to avoid emissions, carbon emissions. But it will be different country by country.
And what can, especially in regards to the European Union, where we try to make Europe as a whole unit and as well, a market that is interconnected, in comparison to Germany and individual preferences and goals. Is there anything that policymakers can do to improve the power supply in Europe, especially working together? Or
yeah, definitely. As I said before, I'm not blaming politicians, but they have to bring their share to the energy transition, and that is the entire regulatory framework. Without that, we end up in nowhere land. And if you look at the last two decades, yes, they have provided the regulatory framework. That's true, with feed-in tariffs, incentivizing renewables. That's all good. Question mark: how, let's say, from an economic perspective, how well they have done. Probably some countries who have spent less than Germany in order to facilitate that, but that is a different discussion. But the evolution of the regulatory framework is as important as our technology innovations. Regulation has to follow the technologies which are available. And they have to provide the framework, so in order to apply the new technologies. If you look at the spectrum of new technologies which are applicable in the markets over the last two decades, I mean, this is huge innovation. And I must say that regulatory framework in the different countries do not support to an extent possible this technology innovations. Best example for that are batteries. I mean, it's now just these days where batteries come into the spectrum of the regulatory framework. 2-3 years ago, storage didn't exist in the regulatory framework. It was not there. Yeah, and that is something where politicians can do better. Be more open to new technologies. Doesn't mean that all technologies have to be supported, but the regulatory framework for those technologies have to be there. That's true for hydrogen. That's true for many other things in the market.
And which technologies do politicians have to look out for that are truly change-making for the energy transition? Or, for instance, energy companies?
That's easy said, but difficult, again, to see in forehand. These are those technologies which can make it to the market from a cost perspective. Yeah, certainly renewables, onshore wind, PV. So I think that's without any doubt. So the cheapest way of producing energy from today's perspective. Offshore to a certain extent, but already with a slight question mark behind, because it's much more expensive. It's a complete different technology, but I think needed. Hydrogen is one, and then the question mark, so which market should be supplied with hydrogen? For which applications do we use hydrogen? Yeah. Is it sensible to burn hydrogen in gas-fired power plants? or should we use a rare resource like hydrogen for other applications? That is where politicians can have a massive say by incentivizing certain routes of that technology. And I think that is, if you then look at security of supply, the question is, where should the hydrogen come from? Should we produce it 100% in Europe, which is very expensive, or should we bring something over the oceans to Europe? So that is where politicians have a vital role in the energy transition.
Besides regulatory decisions and path-making, what do successful energy companies do differently? We talked about technology and business models, but is there something particularly you could observe in your past year or in your experience, what those companies that are particularly successful do differently in their business model? Or
That is probably not just something which applies for energy companies, but successful companies, successful energy companies lead their respective markets in terms of innovation, in terms of pace, in terms of leadership. Yeah, that is what makes companies at the end of the day successful. And above all, in the energy markets, they have to have a stamina. Yeah? So really, the willingness to have a long-term view and follow long-term goals. Without that, again, I think you end up in nowhere. Good example from my own experience, for instance, is Total Energies. It's the only oil and gas multi-company committed to net zero. It is not easy to keep that direction when others like BP or Shell chop and change. Yeah. But the leadership of Total Energies, with the CEO and President Patrick Pouyanné, he has a very clear vision for the company and is consistently, year after year, delivering on his promises. So it needs that vision, but it needs also such great leaders to win the race. And I'm part of that journey, and I'm happy to be part of that journey at Total Energies. And I admire that company for that stamina against a lot of pushback from investors who really have more shorter-term focus, who think that the oil and gas business still supplies a lot of good returns. Why should we open our eyes for the renewable world? But the CEO and president, he has a different view, and he sets the basis for the next 20 years for the company. And I think that is a very good example for a very successful company in a difficult transition.
And if you had to start or want to start your own energy company today, what would be your vision?
Good question. I mean, the energy markets have become more and more cumbersome to manage over time for producers as well as for customers. So therefore, I would probably choose a sound renewable portfolio from PV and wind, a suite of flexible assets who can switch in between. And then certainly I would add to that superior trading capabilities. So I think that mix will make a successful company at the end of the day in this, and that is needed for the markets. So if I would have to choose and could wish, I probably would take that setup.
Interesting. And in 10 years, that company will be hugely successful. But what would you reckon, or how do you see the energy market besides your company in 10 years? So what will change?
Yeah, that's a big question, whether that would be very successful. So it probably depends then on the leadership. But I think in 10 years, the markets will not look too different from today's perspective. So it's not a complete new world. It will be different, but we will still find a lot of things which we see already today or have seen 20 years ago. Again, we talk about a very long-term journey, and 10 years is more or less nothing in energy markets. But it will have a, I think at least in 10 years, a huge capacity of mobile or stationary batteries. So that will be different, definitely, because that all is to come in the next 5 to 10 years. And if you see market by market, there is a huge lineup of battery projects, but there will be also flexible assets like gas speakers, different ones to the ones we have seen in years before, but I also think that will be part of the markets.
My interview is coming to an end, and that's why I have to head to my last question. Who is your favorite change maker? Who do you admire for his or her groundbreaking spirit?
Yeah, I already mentioned one in an earlier question, but don't want to repeat that. There's another one whom I admire from a different perspective, actually, which is also needed in the markets. It's Leo Moreno, CEO from Celestra and ex-AES CEO of the renewables, global renewables business from US. I'm working with him as board member of Celestra. And Leo has embraced the idea of putting customer needs in the forefront of energy offerings. So he builds the entire portfolio of renewables in Celestra from the perspective of customer needs. And to be honest, that is something I try to establish also at Encarvis, but it was either much too early at that time, or I was not good enough. So I leave that question to the audience to answer. He's certainly taking the energy demand from customers in focus in order to build a respective portfolio which can facilitate the needs of the customers from a energy consumption point of view. With price stability and everything else what we have talked about. And that is fascinating to see because it's a complete different approach in the energy market, because energy producers were never customer focused in the past.
Thank you very much, Dirk, for your energy loaded insights. It was a pleasure to listen to your experience and your thoughts, and hope to meet and speak to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Theo, for having me.